Jamie and Locker with you on the Green Zone. I could watch videos of championship celebrations all day from the Knicks and the Hurricanes over the weekend. The latest one I just saw was Martinook of the Carolina Hurricanes. We now know the answer of who started the storm surge. It was him. He went up to Jordan Staal and said, "Jordan, should we do a storm surge right now? It would be badass." And then he was like, "Let's do it." And then he started yelling at his teammates, "Storm surge, storm surge."
It was funny. Last night, you and I were chatting after the game, and you were like, "Oh, they're doing the storm surge."
In the middle of Vegas. That was before the Stanley Cup, of course, was presented.
Take some cojones.
But we'll get into it with Aaron Beard about just the amount of Hurricanes fans who were actually in the building last night in Vegas to watch that victory. As we head to Raleigh, North Carolina right now, Aaron Beard of the Associated Press has been covering the Hurricanes playoff run. They win the Stanley Cup, and I think there's one common thread and one person everybody wants to point at on the reason they're Stanley Cup champions today, Aaron, and no doubt that's Roddy Brind'Amour.
I think Rod Brind'Amour sort of, you know, he's the embodiment of Hurricanes hockey, I think, in a lot of ways for fans here in this market, because, you know, go back to 2006, that image of Rod Brind'Amour taking the cup from Gary Bettman and raising it up and screaming in triumph after they beat Edmonton in a seven-game series, a classic series, you know, that was the defining image for this franchise, really. So, you know, ever since it relocated from Hartford down here in 1997, that was the image that had stayed. You saw it all the time. Every playoff, you would see it. And now there's a new image to go with that. And that's Rod Brind'Amour in a suit holding the cup above his head, screaming again. Now as the coach, he captained to one, and 20 years later, you know, he coached them to it. And look, people don't always think about this, but Rod Brind'Amour has gone to the playoffs 8 times in 8 years. Every time they've won at least one series, even going back to the COVID bubble with the qualifier series. They've gone to the Eastern Finals 4 times. 3 times they lost. They punched through against Montreal this year. But when he inherited the job, when he was promoted, they were in a 9-year postseason drought. They hadn't made the playoffs for 9 seasons. Attendance had fallen off. The energy that comes, you know, in this market when – you know, nobody's expecting them to win the cup every year, but you know, the idea of supporting a winner, a consistent winner, that was not going on here. And Rod Brind'Amour had to basically take this franchise, install a scheme, an approach, a philosophy, a culture that was going to build consistent success, a sustained winner, if you will, a contender. And they've done that. And now you have this punch through moment. They've broken through the Eastern Conference final hurdle. They get to the cup finals. They're down 2-1. And then they reel off 3 straight wins, the last one in really suffocating fashion that really leaned into the team depth approach, the hard work, the grinding style. I mean, you know, this is what Hurricanes hockey has been under Rod Brind'Amour. And remember, too, Rod Brind'Amour arrived in Carolina in 2000. He was in a trade from Philadelphia. So he has been tied to this franchise in some way for a quarter century and, you know, 26 years. And now he has a championship as a captain and a head coach.
It's interesting for me to listen to Rod and some of the interviews that he has done immediately after the game. I don't know about you, but Aaron, did you get the sense that there's a question mark about his future?
No, I didn't think so. I thought that was more the idea of, you know, I think a few years ago there was, you know, they were in the middle of a contract discussion, you know, trying to work out a new deal for him. But that was more as much for him about the supporting staff around him, right? You know, your video staff that helps you, you know, challenge successfully some of these goals to get them overturned. It's, you know, Jeff Daniels, you know, it's all these people that have been around. Paul Schoenfelder, who's been working with the goaltenders. But for him, he kind of said, like, you know, there's a style I coach with, but I couldn't imagine doing it anywhere else. You know, and so Rod Brind'Amour is kind of, I would say, leaned into that idea of, like I said, 26 years ago he arrives. He goes to a cup final in 2002. He wins one in 06. He becomes the head coach. This is home. This is roots for him now because he's been tied to this franchise for so long. So my read of, you know, that was just sort of reflecting back about that and that he looked at it as, hey, this was more about getting this done because this is home for me and this is where I think I should be coaching.
of course, when the cup gets awarded and Jordan Staal lifts it over his head, we go through, okay, who's he going to give it to next? Is it going to be Taylor Hall? Of course, a pick a long time ago, first overall pick. Jacob Slavin's been there forever. Sebastian Aho is another longer tenured Carolina Hurricane, but he hands it to Freddie Anderson, who missed the final three games. Well, what does that show about this group that Freddie got at number two?
Yeah, well, let me back up to what you said before, because you just reeled off a bunch of names, and I think that's a testament to sort of how Rod Brindamore wanted to build this team, Eric Tulsky in the front office, of they built it through depth. They took some big swings at the Mika Rantanen types to get star talent, and, you know, they made these attempts. It didn't always work out, but then they kept pivoting and they kept adjusting, and by the end, you had a Taylor Hall. You had a Logan Stankoven, who was the primary return in the Rantanen deal. You had Jackson Blake. You had these guys taking off. And then you had, you know, Aho and Svechnikov and these mainstays playing well. There was a lot of depth there. And that sort of leads into the Freddie discussion because, you know, Frederick Anderson did not have a good regular season. You know, he kind of struggled, you know, and Brandon Bussey comes in as this waiver wire pickup and suddenly takes the job and runs with it while Freddie's struggling. Brandon Bussey cools off. Freddie sort of gets his feet back under him, probably at the Olympics playing for Denmark. He plays better coming down the stretch, and then he's really good for three rounds of the playoffs. I just think that there was an idea of acknowledging that Freddie stepped up for the Hurricanes. Like, Rod Brindamore trusts veteran experience. He went with Freddie in that. If you had said at the start of the playoffs, well, Freddie Anderson's going to go the whole way to the Stanley Cup Finals, that would have been a surprise. You would have expected Bussey to have mixed in somewhere, but Freddie was really good. In a lot of ways, Freddie kind of helped push them all the way to that moment. And then Brandon Bussey was almost like the closer as a pitcher, you know, that took over and finished the job. And I think that was an acknowledgement that, you know, at the end, Freddie wasn't quite right. I think he told reporters there that he had had a little tweak in his knee, I believe is what he said, during game two, before he exited in game three. But he had kind of helped push them there through his steady and consistent play. And I think that was an acknowledgement of that and a testament, again, to this team's depth.
Aaron Beard's joining us, Associated Press, as the Carolina Hurricanes will now head home to Carolina celebrating a Stanley Cup. I just want to assume, I shouldn't assume, I assume things were a lot more tame, celebratory than destructive than Knicks fans in New York from Saturday.
You know, no school buses on fire or anything like that.
Yeah. No, there were no stories of crazy, you know, just images of, you know, some apocalyptic, you know, whatever. No, nothing like that. I mean, what you saw, though, I will say what you did see, though, was, you know, the Hurricanes were selling out their home arena for the viewing party for fans. And then they had fans outside watching, you know, a lot of them. The Redhead Amphitheater, it's a concert venue in downtown, was hosting. There's a Rialto movie theater. It's one of those historic old theaters, kind of a one-screen movie theater in Raleigh. It was hosting viewing parties packed to the gills. Like, what you had was, like, you know, pockets of these places that were all sort of all in on the Hurricanes. And you saw that in a lot of different ways, because one thing to keep in mind about this market, Raleigh is the capital city, but this is the triangle region of North Carolina. So you have Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill sort of together, right? And that's where, you know, UNC, Duke, and NC State and college athletics, you know, the triangle right there, all about 30 minutes apart. So you have multiple town communities. It's sort of a larger, you know, it's not like a city center necessarily like New York or anywhere else, but it's a little bit more spread out. So, you know, you do have like smaller areas, if you will, of the gatherings and the festive, but they're all in on the Hurricanes in that regard. It's the one way you can get Tar Heels and Blue Devils and Wolfpack fans to sort of agree on something is Hurricanes hockey in the postseason.
And more coming up with Aaron Beard of the Associated Press from Raleigh. He's going to stick around and tell you more about the Hurricanes, the 2026 Stanley Cup champions. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. About the time she walked away from me. Nobody likes you when you're 23. And I saw more abuse by TV shows. We continue our conversation with Aaron Beard of the Associated Press covering the Carolina Hurricanes. And right after one championship, you look, can they repeat? And Aaron, everybody's under contract except for Nikishin. And they have $12 million in cap space. Like, this team's built not only to win this year, but they might be dangerous again next season and beyond.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that's an important thing to note, because that's, again, a testament to how they've built the roster. Frederick Anderson is an unrestricted free agent. He will be for next year. And then Nikishin is a restricted. But you're right. Like, the rest of the roster is locked up. And not only locked up, you know, you've got a lot of guys that are young, on the rise, at their, you know, at their peak, that are locked up for multiple years. You know, Sebastian Aho is locked up till 2032. Nick Ehlers, who came in as a free agent missing piece, through 2031. Svechnikov through 2029. Seth Jarvis through 2032, I believe. So you look it around, and there's these pieces like Jacob Slavin, Keandre Miller. Like, they've got a lot of stability built into the structure of what they've done. It's been about developing. It's been about taking chances on the right guys that fit your culture and your system. And for the most part, like, these bets have paid off over time, including when they've chosen to invest in contracts. So now what you have is a roster that is intact, that really shouldn't have dramatic changes for next year. Like, and you have now 8 years of playoff experience that now includes the breakthrough, the final step, if you will, of, you know, before it was, can they punch through the Eastern Conference final roadblock? Now they have won a Stanley Cup together as that unit. So now you're carrying that championship experience plus the previous years of playoff experience with a roster that comes back intact. And that gives them a lot of ability to sort of adjust if they need to be really selective in how they address their roster and sort of helping a roster that already has proven, like, it was the second best team in the NHL in the regular season, then just went 16-3 through the playoffs. So that you, when you look at that, you're like, well, there's not a lot of holes here you have to fill.
I'll be honest. I was blown away by how many Canes fans showed up in Vegas on Sunday night, Aaron. Like, it looked like at points, like, 35% of the audience was wearing Canes jerseys. That has to say something about where hockey is at in Raleigh.
Yeah, and what we said earlier, you know, about Rod Brind'Amour, that sort of comes into that you're talking about, you know, building a culture that's not just about what you do on the ice, it's about the market, right? That this is a market that has been successful. If you go back to 2002 in the Cup final and 2006 and winning the Cup, you know, but again, like, when you go through a 9-year playoff drought, that can shake some belief, that can shake some fan interest, that can shake confidence, if you will, and maybe direction of what's going on. You know, to that point, you know, I went back and looked at the attendance, and, you know, when Rod Brind'Amour came in, you know, the attendance was around 12,000, 12,400 for home games. And it had dropped from north of 16,000 in 2009. Well, the last 2 years, they're sitting there packing them in now. The playoffs, the environment is full because year after year, they're successful. They're in contention. You're talking now close to 18.8 roughly is the 2-year average for home games. They drew 57,000 fans for the outdoor, the stadium game at NC State's football stadium directly across the street from the home arena. You know, you go to a Hurricanes game, especially in the playoffs, you go early, fans are tailgating. It's like a college football Saturday in there, and they're tailgating for a long time. And then they go in there and they're packed and they're loud and they're buzzing. So in that respect, there's been a lot of confidence. There's been a lot of belief. There's been a lot of pride in, you know, what Rod Brind'Amour and this particular team and this front office have built. So in that regard, I think there was a lot of fans when you kind of look at the images of, you know, Hurricanes fans that were in the building celebrating and watching, that had belief, that they had seen, like, years of struggle had built and built and built. And then you watch the way they had played through the playoffs. I think at the end it became, there was a lot of confidence that they could get this done. Not cockiness, but like kind of like, these guys are really good, yeah, and they're going to keep playing hard. They're going to keep working, and they can get this done, and I want to be there for that. I think there was a lot of fans that were that way. It was the same thing with, again, you know, 19,000 people coming to a viewing party in an arena with nothing going on the ice but graphics.
That is Aaron Beard from the Associated Press in Raleigh. Meanwhile, the NHL offseason officially underway, and now it's out that, yes, the NHL is and has activated an investigation with Mike Babcock's departure for Columbus, activated by the Oilers' interest in hiring or potentially hiring Mike Babcock as the head coach. A name we recognize here in Saskatchewan in hockey, Ethan Bear, trying to make a comeback. The New York Islanders signing him to a two-way contract extension. of course, a former Oiler and Hurricane previous. So we'll see how his comeback comes. Day off for the Toronto Blue Jays before they begin a set in Boston against the Boston Red Sox. But coming up here on the Green Zone, we're going to open up the fan line. What did you think about the Stanley Cup final? Also, what about those Riders as they beat the BC Lions on Saturday?
Or NBA.
Or the Knicks.
Talk about the Knicks not burning down the city?
They did burn down a few school buses, tried to flip a cop car or two, but New York still stands today. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone on this Monday afternoon. Hope you're enjoying your afternoon. It could be another rainy week in Saskatchewan with about normal, just below normal temperatures as we get closer and closer to summer.
We need like a week or two of like good weather. None of this like sunny day,
rainy day,
rainy day, sunny day. It's kind of like the Jays right now.
Yes, sir. I would like more than just a day or two.
Yeah.
Like I would like a week three or four or a month of, you know, regular 30 temperatures. Then you mix in the showers for the egg center so we don't get to.
I'm okay with like a good 4 or 5 days of sun, maybe a day, like evening showers or something like that, thunderstorms, and then back at it. But we have not had that so far.
To just keep the hail away, please. A lot of hail damage on vehicles in my neighborhood from a couple of days ago.
Did you get any on the new truck?
I ran out and backed it into the garage, which it doesn't fit in the garage. So I was just. But yeah, others in the neighborhood, the truck.
Not so lucky.
Two or three doors down, I drove by. I was like, ooh, yeah. Well, the Curling Rocks looks more like a golf ball now that you joke about my smaller vehicle.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So as Belton Johnson said, we were joking about his job at SGI and Alex Hale being the new kicker. And he's like, can we just not talk about Hale at all today? He did not, even though the kicker or otherwise. Yeah. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. We're going to open up the fan line 1-877-332-8255. What are you thinking as the Riders, they take on the BC Lions and it's a victory. And yes, can I just, I get it. I picked the Lions. My goodness. You think I predicted the Riders to go 0-18 this season? I'm picking them to be in the West Final against the BC Lions.
Here's the thing with that pick, and this is where I will side with the rest of Saskatchewan in coming at you immediately after the game and through the show today. Like, there was so many reasons why you should have picked the Riders on Saturday. I get it. You're caught up in the Nathan Rourke hype. I understand it. But there were so many reasons. They're putting the banner up. Right? This team is coming off of a Grey Cup win.
But part of the reason why I've seen teams have the banner raising and then they just like fall flat on the field.
Not this team.
No.
Not with a 40-year-old quarterback who knows what he's doing. He's calm and cool and composed. Not with those targets that he has in that receiving room. That was a clinic. That was an offensive clinic on Saturday.
1-877-332-8255 is the fan line. It's open to you. Anything goes as we open up the fan line. If it's the Riders or Ryan wants to talk about the Carolina Hurricanes. Ryan, what do you think of that Stanley Cup championship last night?
They finally got it done. After all these years of just almost getting there, they finally did it.
Well, I remember 2006 quite clearly.
Yeah, that was 20 years ago, but Ryan, I get you. Are you a Hurricanes fan here in the province?
Yes, since birth. I am 22.
Okay. See, what Ryan was just 2 years old when they won, so this is the first time he's really grasp it.
I was a little older than two in 2006.
What drew you to the Hurricanes? I'm always curious on why people cheer for different teams.
My dad was a Whalers fan growing up, so it was nice to finally get to watch a win with him.
Cool.
I was hoping for the Stanley Cup final they would have worn the Whalers jerseys just one time. Just one time.
Okay, that Ryan, cool. I have a question for you. Have you heard about the cinder block rumors?
No, I have not.
Okay, this is a fun little story. We saw it a couple of times online. We haven't got 100% confirmation on it. So at the beginning of the year, Rod Brind'Amour was getting the players at the end of their workouts, their scheduled team workouts.
Yeah, it's in their workout regimen. Is lifting a cinder block over your head.
So part of the routine, at the end of it, you have to lift this cinder block. And everyone was like, no one questioned it. They were just like, this is Rod. He's a crazy freak out guy. So, and this isn't the first time the cinder block thing has been part of Rod's regiment. He's done this over the years. So just before the Stanley Cup final, he came into the dressing room and announced to everybody with this cinder block in his hand, he said, this thing that you've been lifting over your heads all season long weighs exactly as much as the Stanley Cup.
That's a little Hurricanes lore, Ryan, on this cup run.
I thought you would find that more interesting than you did, Ryan.
Sebastian Aho was the one who told that story. But what do you think, Ryan?
Great story.
Ryan, going forward, do you think you look at this team and how they're built? Are you happy with one, or are you like, man, this team could win another one soon?
Because be back in the
so many guys are under contract, Ryan. It's crazy.
The window is going to be open for quite some time.
It definitely is. Ryan, congratulations. At some point, I hope my team will let me know what it's like to celebrate a Stanley Cup championship.
And start working out with a cinder block, Ryan.
Yeah.
Sooner the better.
Yeah, don't be like me and look in 10 years. Could I have a body like Rod Brind'Amour? I better start doing some push-ups here, to be quite honest.
I think it's a little more involved than that. But good luck.
Yeah, probably start drinking less cola as well. Might help as well. Let's go back to the fan line, 1-877-332-8255. Wally, you want to talk about CFL rule changes. What's on your mind after watching the first 2 weeks of the season?
Well, if I'm a little huffing and puffing a bit, it's because I was doing one-arm push-ups here, just trying to be like Brind'Amour. So it's a great story about the cinder creep block. That's good.
Okay. Thanks,
man. I was just thinking of the movie Gladiator, and you know, where Russell Crowe, after he, you know, does all the battles in there, he turns to the emperor in the audience and he says, "Were you not entertained?" And the point I'm making is, six games we've witnessed so far in the CFL, basically old rules except for the clock and a couple of minor things. But what's wrong with the rules we have? I'm totally against, as you know, I've called in before, I'm against shortening the field, I'm against shortening the end zones. And if you look, there's a couple touchdowns that would have been getting close to the end of the back of the shortened end zones. How do you make things smaller and going to score 60 more touchdowns? Explain that to me. I mean, you know, if I gave you a football and said, could you hit the side of your building? You probably can. But now I'm going to cut a little hole in it and say, now fire that football through it. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I just don't see the need, and I think if enough of us get together and squawk, maybe Stuart Johnston will walk back some of these changes, and it's going to be pricey. I mean, we're looking at new turf here pretty soon. Well, just in case the rules ever went back, are we going to stitch in an extra 10 yards, and players are going to be getting injured on the seams, or, you know, other stadiums, the effect on minor football, university football? I mean, the decision that Stuart Johnston made and the board of directors that were with him just makes no sense to me. I mean, I don't see the need. And if you're thinking of selling it to people in Europe or wherever because they're more acquainted with the NFL and you want to Americanize the game, you don't need to. Us people that follow football, do you guys have any problem telling the difference between the NFL and the CFL? Gee, we can figure out a few nuances here and there, and I'm sure everybody else that would be subscribing to DAZN or whatever in Europe and wherever else on the moon, they could probably figure a few rule changes, differences out. So I'm totally set against changing things. We've seen great football, and I just don't see the rationale behind it. That's my story.
Wally, you're not the first one who I've seen talk about that. I've talked about it. What's broken? Revenues are going up. What's broken?
Yeah.
Scoring is pretty high at the start. What's broken?
So
they sold us a broken product. They sold us. We have to move forward. We have to do this.
Change is inevitable. No, I get that. And I'm not just from the other side of the fence, just to play devil's advocate here. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the changes that Stu has made will actually mess the game up?
We were talking about this in the press box. And Daryl and I and Belton on the pregame show too. Because there's been a few scenarios. It's 3rd and 5. You have the ball at the 25-yard line. Right now, that is a 32-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Okay, you kick the field goal.
Yeah.
3rd and 5 from the 25-yard line. Next year will be a 47-yard field goal.
15 yards back.
Do you go for it? But there's a few instances like late in the game with the Riders. They're at the 5-yard line. They're not going for it from the 5. They're just kicking the chip shot. Will that change if it's at the 5-yard line and that's not a 12-yard field goal, but it's a 27-yard? Probably not. 27 yards should be a gimme.
Mm.
So
it's going to depend, I think, on what point of the game you're at, the type of coach. Right, like I think there's too many variables to sit there and break it down.
And
right?
Now a missed field goal is just out the back of the end zone. There's no missed field goal return excitement where, oh, can he bring it back? Nope, because it's just whoop, out the end zone. The team gets the 40. So it's all these things. We haven't seen it yet.
I think you will see more gambling on 3rd.
No, you won't.
You don't think so, eh?
I hope so.
I think you
But
will.
I'm with Daryl and say I don't think these coaches are too conservative. There's not enough Dan Campbells in the world like the Detroit Lions to go, no, let's go. They're hoping analytically they'll go and create more excitement and keep pushing downfield to get a touchdown, but I'm not so sure. They're trying to get kickers with big legs so they can kick those now 50-yard field goals rather than that used to be 35-yarders.
But so, that's not going to be a guarantee.
No, but they'll kick it far enough that there's no missed field goal return because it's going to be out the back of the end zone. I understand what Wally's talking about, and I get it. Did they need these changes to grow the game, expand the game, all that stuff? So they buttered it up, and you know, some people will say put lipstick on a pig, and you look at it and say, okay. It can fit within these dimensions now, and everything's going to Toronto's field, and everybody's field's going to have the same. Oh, okay, that looks cleaner. And oh, look at this one play that the field goal post got in the way of on TSN. Now that's we can see that interception without looking around goal posts.
I'm kind of in the Milt Stegall camp, and where you know what things change.
The play clock, though, I think it's working.
Yeah. But and the one issue that I have is that I think the one of the harder conversations that I think somebody needs to have with Stu is the you need to slow down conversation. Because that's the issue I have now is okay.
Because every time we talk to Dave, he's like, oh, I don't know if they're done yet. And everybody's like, really? Like they're exhausted.
Like I don't think it's a good idea to keep throwing more change at everybody. I think that might be a mistake.
1-877-332-8255. Still coming up. Belton Johnson, more on Saturday's game with the Riders win over the BC Lions on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone on this Monday afternoon. Belton Johnson coming up to talk more about the green and white. A couple of people texting in. Jim also says, I underestimated the Riders as well, predicting a BC win. Thanks for the honesty, Jim. I'm not alone. Also, Rod is weighing in on the goofy playoff format next year.
That's the one that I have a hard time. Probably the biggest concern I have.
Reseeding, huh?
I don't mind the reseeding. I don't like the fact that 8 of the 9 teams are going to make the playoffs. And even if there's the expansion, it's still eight of 10 teams are making the playoffs. It's ridiculous, in my opinion.
As he says, the late season push usually draws more bums to the seats. Now it's like, oh, we're fifth. What's that? Okay, we're playing round one. Well, okay. I'll wait until the playoffs now to buy a seat. I understand that too.
More playoffs.
And I hate to say, I guess we'll just wait and see, but that's where we're at. We're waiting to see. Nathan Rourke was on last week, and he agrees with Rod and others. He's not a fan of the playoff format. He's not a fan with the change. He's hoping that enough of CFL traditionalists can try to force change, but I don't think they're changing.
I don't think they're reversing any of it.
Although early indications prove the rules are just fine where they are in the CFL this season so far with the scoring and exciting finishes.
Very exciting.
Meanwhile, the latest in sports, the NHL has activated an investigation into Mike Babcock's departure of Columbus, as the Oilers do want to see if he's potentially their next head coach. Cape Verde, a stunning draw today against the favorite going in, Spain, 0-0. This is the first tournament ever for the Cape Verde team. Also, Iran will play their first game at the World Cup tonight. They face New Zealand in Los Angeles. Belgium and Egypt were at a 1-1 draw. Saudi Arabia is on the pitch right now against Uruguay. Again, Belton Johnson is next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.